Next is discussion agenda beginning with item H. This is Judicial Branch Administration, California State Auditor's Report on the Judicial Council. There may be some inconsistency in your materials. This is not an action item, despite the statement in the recommendation that asks for approval. This is purely informational. There are no materials on item H, and I invite Presiding Judge Marcia Slough and also Martin Hoshino to address this item.
Would you like us to stay where we are, or?
Wherever you're most comfortable.
Okay, I'll just stay right here because I love being next to Rick.
Thank you.
That's always comfortable. Thank you, Chief Justice and council members. Justice Miller sends his regrets about not being able to attend the hearing today or the meeting today. He serves as the chair of the audit working group. He asked me to report on the group's progress in his stead. As you know, last month the Judicial Council received a report from the state auditor which questioned the council's fiscal and operational decision making. The Chief Justice stated that once she received that report, that it actually serves as an important tool to further facilitate the ongoing self-assessment within the branch, which obviously she considers to be the duty of all public officials. On the same day that we received that report, the chief established the audit working group, as stated, chaired by Justice Miller. The purpose was to develop a work plan to respond to the audit findings. Thank you. I think that it's really important to look at the composition of the audit working group, because I think the appointments point up how the chief values the participatory, inclusive, and deliberative process in decision-making for this council and for the branch as a whole. She appointed Judges Charlie Wacob and Judge Brian McCabe, both members of this council, who were the chairs of the Strategic Evaluation Committee. The first audit was completed of Judicial Council staff was performed based on their good work. They obviously are very capable of speaking for themselves, but they have shared with us that the work that the SEC completed is covered by much of the same ground as that of the state auditor. In addition to these two judges, she also wanted to assure that the trial court was represented in the audit working group. In that regard, she appointed Mary Beth Todd, who is the chair of the Court Executives Advisory Committee. She appointed Judge Lori Earl, who is the chair of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. And she appointed myself, as I serve as the chair of the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee. The audit addresses Judicial Council operations and spending as it relates to the trial courts. The services that the Judicial Council staff members provide to the trial courts is a very important and significant element of their work. However, they also support us, the Judicial Council. They also support all of the courts of appeal. So to make sure that all of these voices within the group to represent all of these areas, she appointed Justice Miller as well as Justice James Humes of the First District Court of Appeal. The audit oversight work met within the first week of our appointment, and we've been meeting, I think, at least weekly, sometimes maybe a couple of times a week since that time. And I will say that our conversations are robust, diverse, challenging, inclusive, and most of all, productive. Our task is to oversee, for the most part, the initial 60-day response due to the state auditor, which is actually due on March 7th. The report that you'll hear in a moment from Mr. Hoshino is an interim report on our progress. At the first meeting of the group, we studied the auditor's recommendations, and we actually came up with kind of three overarching assignments. First, we asked the administrative director, Martin Hoshino, to look at the pay and benefit issues. We asked Judge Earl to review issues related to the local versus state funding. And she's working with the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee on that. We also asked Justice Miller to have the Executive and Planning Committee review the Council's directives, which were based on the SEC recommendations. Today's interim report is going to focus on the Administrative Director's responsibilities. But before I turn it over to you, Martin, I just want to add and let you all know that this audit working group has the utmost respect, confidence in your abilities, Martin, in your experience as a government administrator. You have been candid, thoughtful, and decisive through this process in responding to the audit recommendations. You've also kept public service responsibility and good business practices in the forefront during this process. Martin, thank you for your work, and I turn it over to you now.
Thank you, Judge Lau, Chief Members. I also want to, before getting into some of the details of some of the early actions we've been able to take, to thank the staff who, in addition to all the other duties and responsibilities that they have had to drill down on some information, some analysis, as well as respond to a lot of the additional information requests that the front office here placed on them in order to get to a place of what I would call sufficient analysis or sufficient information to justify an initial set of actions and decisions, which I'll catalog for you in a moment. The Audit Oversight Work Group, as well as our team, has been focusing on what we refer to as Chapter 1. That's been the heaviest part of our work. The top line conclusion, at least in this status report for us, is that we believe that we have been able to either fully or substantially complete 4 of the 14 recommendations that were assigned to us. I say this as in our opinion because by process, information that we produce for the 60-day report that Judge Slough alluded to will now move to the state auditor's office at the 60-day mark, and the state auditor will render their professional opinion about whether things are substantially or partially completed. But at least this is our conclusion, our opinion of where we are at this point in time. I would also note that some of this information could change between the time that you're hearing it today as well as March 7th, because if you remember at the first report in interval, which was last month, we had told folks or advised folks that we thought we would be reporting it in gates of information and during different council meetings or in ledge hearings, wherever those opportunities presented themselves, and that we would be more real time or more rolling in the production of the information of our progress in response to the audit. I want to make clear that of those 4 of the 14 recommendations, one of those recommendations has 2 subparts to it, and we completed both of those items. Another one of those recommendations has 5 subparts, and we conclude that we have substantially completed 4 of the 5 subparts. I spend some time parsing it out like this because I neither want to overstate our progress to date, nor do I want to understate it. The 3 additional recommendations that are there are in essence assigned to the legislature, and so you may have heard the number that there are 17 recommendations in total, and so we are not responding directly to those, which is why we use the number 14. Again, much of the emphasis of the past 6 weeks has been on the recommendations that are in Chapter 1 and 2. Judge Slough has alluded to Chapter 1, focusing heavily on pay and benefits. Chapter 2 is the responsibilities that are landing more squarely with Judge Earle and her particular team. Chapters 3 and 4, which we will not be talking much about today, are the things, by reminder, that are more broader in terms of organizational change, or they're broader in terms of accounting practices and budgeting practices and the like. And those are the things that I have described before that are bigger, wider, that require more evaluation, more analysis, and the like, and that some of the things are actually dependent upon one another, where you've got to do one thing first before you can do another, such as if you're going to survey the trial courts and the appellate courts for level of services so that you can align your organization, so that you can develop performance measures. Some of these things will naturally take more time. We are busy putting together an action item implementation schedule for those things that we make sense, and then trying to put ranges of time and attach that to that so that we can continue to report out of what you might be able to expect when in terms of our progress. I'm a bit reserved on all of that because I want to make sure that once we get to a stage where we can actually share these kinds of milestones and the time frames that we think that we can accomplish them, that is actually a credible schedule that you can count on. And so I'm reserving a little bit of time working with the team to make sure that we can actually do the things that we say we're going to do when we can do them. So in terms of some of the specific items, the sufficient analysis was available to take the following actions. I'm going to actually, in a rote manner, go through the actual recommendation from the state auditor for about 7 items, as well as describe the action that we have taken or are about to take on it. I will frame the recommendation more succinctly so it is not a verbatim reading of the actual recommendation from the auditor, and I want to be clear about that. The first recommendation is that we should be adopting procedures that require a regular and thorough review of the AOC's compensation practices. That includes a job duties analysis and that it aligns with the requirements of the position, and that the review should include comparable executive branch salaries. The status for that is that what we've talked about before and that you're aware of, that there's a classification and compensation study that has already been underway as a result of the SEC directives. Nevertheless, for the part of the recommendation that is about adopting procedures to make sure that you are doing those things, those procedures are being modified consistent with the frequency that we see in other governmental agencies with respect to managing and checking in on your compensation structure and processes. The next item is a recommendation that we cease paying for the employee share of retirement contributions. And so effective July 1 of this year, 2015, this benefit will be eliminated, and all staff that were identified in the report will be required to pay their share of the employee's retirement cost. The third item is that we mirror the executive branch's practices for leave buyback. This is when you get to the end of a fiscal year, you realize in your budget that there are sums of money, you make decisions about where to apply that, and sometimes employers across the state in all branches and all places, if they have the capacity, will offer a leave buyback program for their employees. For our action on this item, we have decided to suspend the Judicial Council leave buyback program for the next 2 fiscal years, so that is this year and next year. And then when we consider reinstating this program, we'll review all the programs that are currently in play or in practice or being offered by executive branch entities, trial courts, and like entities that are contemporaneous with our particular operating environment. The next one is to ensure employees are paid appropriately. The AOC should follow its policy to periodically verify that salary differentials are based on an employee's actual work location. So we have done the work of correcting and reconciling the pay for the 5 employees that were identified in the report, and we will be conducting quarterly reconciliations of each employee's primary work location to assure that any issues that are identified in the future are rectified in a timely and appropriate manner. The next item is that we should follow, I think I'm on number 5 here, follow the AOC's policies and procedures limiting the period of time it can employ temporary workers, and develop a similar policy to limit the use of contractors to a reasonable period of time, but no more than 1 year. So the AOC policy in this regard has now been amended to include that contractors may not exceed 1 year in duration unless pre-approved by myself or by the chief administrative officer. To ensure that the council has adequate information on this, we will also create an annual reporting mechanism to the Judicial Council for any exceptions to this particular rule. The next item is number 6, which is to cease reimbursing its office directors for parking at their headquarters by adopting the executive branch's parking reimbursement policies. By way of information, our office directors are provided up to a $230 monthly stipend to offset their cost of paid parking. It's important for you to know that not all directors receive this stipend on a monthly basis, and some only request it on an as-needed basis. Nevertheless, effective July 1 of this year, 2015, the benefit will be eliminated for the office directors, and they will begin paying their parking costs. The last item is number 7 regarding fleet vehicles. The audit report had identified that the Judicial Council had 66 vehicles in its fleet I want the council to note that 45 of those vehicles are assigned to staff in the real estate facilities and management and capital program offices. This is an office that is serving and supporting the maintenance of facilities of over 500 courthouses in all 58 counties. I am naturally trying to manage your expectations that early on we can see that a big chunk of these vehicles are for what appears to be at this point in time a legitimate business purpose. However, and again, our early first review of this in the 6 weeks since the audit, we've been able to identify 22 vehicles that we are comfortable eliminating it based on the DG, the General Services, Department of General Services policies regarding fleet vehicles and vehicle mileage that was driven in the year 2014. So that represents about one-third of our fleet. Similarly, the audit recommends, and we now are developing a cost-benefit criteria and an internal control where we will be able to now have a criteria. We will apply it retroactively to the balance of the vehicles, the other two-thirds for the 44 that remain, to make sure that they meet the criteria and the policy and procedures that we actually develop in this regard. And similarly, we will establish an internal control where there is one location and one decision point for the justification and where this criterion analysis will be applied, rather than leaving it to the discretion of the different programs or divisions that are operating here. With the balance or the remaining of the recommendations, we continue to evaluate them, to analyze them, and as I alluded to earlier, trying to put a reasonable schedule of when those things can be done and when. The future reporting intervals that the members should be attuned to are the 60-day report, which is due March 7th, that Judge Slough alluded to, as well as the upcoming April Judicial Council meeting. And that's about as far into the future that we can project and see for the next set of reports. With that, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you, Judge Slough.
Can I ask a question about one of the items?
Sure.
I was just curious what the rationale was for suspending the vacation buyback program for 2 years and essentially acceding to the state auditor on that particular point, because I'm aware of about a 24-page written report from the Independent Legislative Analyst's Office that recommends vacation buybacks as a prudent management tool for managing unfunded leave balances. And I know in the case of the Supreme Court, it's been very successful. At the state appellate court entities, leave balances spiraled very high with furloughs because people were having to use their furlough days. We had about 20 or 25 employees approaching their leave maximums at the end of the calendar year. I did a vacation buyback, and this past year we were down to 4. So I just wonder whether we ought to be acceding to them on that point. It seems to me we have independent analysis by the Legislative Analyst Office that, unlike other state entities which don't enforce their leave caps, we're actually acting quite responsibly.
So my response to that is I don't characterize it as a ceding. The suspension is for the period of time to actually properly analyze it. I agree. One side of the debate is that when you can do this, you should do this. It is a sound management practice because you are essentially, when doing leave buyback or sell back, whatever you want to call it, you are in fact reducing a future unfunded liability that gets pushed off into the future. The executive branch, candidly, probably doesn't do it as often because its budgets are a little bit tighter. The other side of the argument and the question is that if you're in a condition where you are doing leave buyback every single year as a particular department, entity, or organization, and you're doing it, again, consecutive 3, 4, 5 years, it brings on the table the question, are you, in fact, over-budgeted? Because that's technically not what that money is funded for and what its purpose is. And so we have done this in a series of years. I don't know the actual amount of the number of years or whether each year it was 20 hours or 60 or 80. I've seen some of the numbers flying around, but we have to actually look at that to see if that is a budget item that belongs properly categorized somewhere else and analyze that variation. Now, the truth is the distance between here and the end of the fiscal year is an easier call to make. We also are having some budgetary challenges that are documented that you're going to talk about a little bit today in terms of some funds have deficits and some don't. So I can't see the wisdom of recommending, at least certainly in this fiscal year, that we do something like that, especially in the environment that we're dealing with. So that was an easier part of the decision, at least for me, to recommend and to hear and to make. The second part of it then is looking into the current fiscal year. Again, seems kind of logical until we figure out a little bit more about how this budget works, that the two-year interval seemed to be the right amount, or the two fiscal years seem to be the right amount to stop and pause, finish the analysis, and then come back and then also analyze it in the context of what is going on in terms of the financial health of the judicial branch as well as the financial health of the state at large and what are the other departments and everybody else doing. So I hope that it helps unpack the logic a little bit more for you.
Yeah, thank you. That's very helpful.
Thank you.
So, Chief, our next Council, our next step will be to sit with Executive and Planning Committee when it reviews the Council directives that were based on the SEC recommendations. You know, I would really be remiss if I didn't say two final things. One, we couldn't do the work we do on this committee that you've charged us to do without the help of staff. They've been extremely helpful, and I very much appreciate the work that you're doing on top of everything else. And second, as it relates to this council, by listening to Martin's update and interim report, as well as his response to Mr. McGuire's question, you really should be commended for hiring him as our administrative director. We are in very good hands. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. I concur in all of the comments made. I am greatly pleased by, first of all, the audit task force members who agreed to serve on the audit task force on such short notice. When I receive a thank you with a question mark, I know that a member who has sent that to me understands the gravity and the responsibility and the need. And so I appreciate that, because this is on top of all the other work that you are currently all doing for the branch. And this has a long-term impact for us. And I'm greatly pleased by the process thus far and the report that's getting ready for March 7. I know these were not easy decisions at all. I know there's been a great deal of discussion. So with lots of gratitude here, thank you. And I concur in the remarks about Martin thus far. Thank you.